author of Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money and founder of slowmoney.org, and Henry Petroski, author of The Essential Engineer, Why Science Alone Will Not Solve Our Global Problems, and professor of civil engineering at Duke University. For more info, kbo.fm/revv2011.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring. I haven't heard that theme music for a while. Anyway, I am filling in for Cecil and Celeste today. This is More Talk Radio. And today we're going to talk about 9/11. And first, I got a couple announcements. There will be a rally for the workers in Wisconsin. And that rally will be in Salem at noon at the state capitol. So if you want to express yourself about the situation in Wisconsin, you can go down to Salem at noon. The rally is sponsored by Jobs with Justice. I don't know if there's going to be any carpooling or not, but Jobs with Justice has a phone number, 503-236-5573. Maybe somebody will be there. Maybe they'll have a recorded message. But anyway, it's easy to get down to Salem if you're driving. Take Amtrak down there. The other thing that's happening today is there is a panel hearing on the crisis with the Postal Service. And that's going to be tonight at Augustana Lutheran Church, which is at Northeast 14th and Knott. And that's going to be at 6 p.m. And it's going to be kind of like a people's panel. They're going to take testimony all about mail service and all that. Because the government or people in the government are talking about trimming our postal service. They want to, they're talking about cutting Saturday delivery. And I think one of the things that keeps coming back is, why do those people way out in some little town out in eastern Oregon, why do they need mail service? You know, why can't they drive to Pendleton or something? You know, that's that kind of thing. So anyway, there will be this panel hearing tonight at Augustana Lutheran Church, 6 p.m. It's at Northeast 14th and Knott. So when you come back from Salem, you can go over to the church and hear about the Postal Service. Okay. We have two guests today. They are both with the WTC Science Alliance. We have Director Barry Ball, and then we have Barbara Ellis, who is, are you Professor Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, welcome to KABU. Okay, and they have they are kind of sponsoring a proposed bill for the House of Representatives. They've been lobbying for this for a couple of years now that will call for a really independent investigation, which we haven't had. We've had official investigations, or the official conspiracy theory has been presented and found lacking by many people. And so this bill, which I have a copy of, would call for a really independent investigation. So why don't one of you tell us about the bill? What's in it?
Oh, basically, what we'd like to have happen in this bill is to bring forth a evidence-based, independent, inclusive, detailed, comprehensive, even criminal investigation to the destruction, not collapse or failure, but the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings. And this is not a social or political attempt. This is really one that says science and technology really will provide the answers as to who, what, why, where, and when. And none of this has been done. We look at the public law 307-306, which was supposed to engage us in an investigation, which is really never completed. It only gave us a few bureaucratic changes of departments that need to know how to talk to each other, and made one other recommendation about fire codes, and that hasn't even been followed. So this investigation, we hope, with 14 different theories, and we would like those 14 theories not to be looked at individually and eliminated one by one by a panel of 25 international and national researchers, scientific researchers, engineers, etc. But we would like these 14 theories to be held together. There is evidence in each one of them that's been excluded by the other. In typical American fashion, each one of these hypotheses, people proposing these hypotheses have excluded each other and the evidence. So you might find evidence in one that is excluded and is necessary to give you a full picture of it there. So we hope that we've been back to Washington twice. We've presented this bill to 18 different congressional offices, and we continue to be in communication with those congressional offices, including the delegation here in Oregon.
So what kind of response have you gotten?
Well, the response is, they're usually very polite. We have, when you go to Washington to lobby a bill, you need to be well aware that each House member, for example, has specialists called their aides. Mm-hmm. And we talked to the science and tech aides. And we also talked to the director of the House Science and Tech Committee has its own research committee. And we had talked to the director there. You asked about the response. They were usually very polite, and in many instances, very interested. We said, we'd keep contact with these people. We went through the five categories with them, along with the photographs, which we were showing you, Per, but you can't show it on the radio.
Pretty hard to show photographs
on
the radio.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. But there are five categories. One is, of course, that the aircraft one, that the planes hit the buildings and they fell down, and the fire brought them down. And we know anybody in fire science will tell you, no steel frame building, no matter how high they are, will come down. There has to be something else in there, and that's been true since 1911 with the Triangle Fire. And the Ash Building was a 10-story building, and that's still standing.
Well,
by the way,
Empire with a tremendous building too.
That's right. It was hit by a plane in fog. It was a B-25.
Mm-hmm. Smaller plane than these.
It was a smaller plane, but nevertheless, we go through the aircraft hit them. One other category is missiles and bombs, and here you have to another category is directed energy with lasers. Another one is chemical and high-yield explosives. We noticed that the only explosive that anybody has looked at is RDX, and there are others much more explosive, including the old thermobaric bombs that they dropped in Vietnam to clean out basements, to clean out other enclosures. And the last one is nuclear. We were talking to you before the program about the findings of the U.S. Geological Survey, who went around that 16-area complex shortly after the bombing and discovered high elements, residue of strontium-90, of barium, of vanadium, et cetera.
Tritium.
And tritium.
So all these things would, a real investigation would include all these points.
Yes, they would. They would have to go into each one of these. But in pure scientific investigation, scientific method, they call it, you have to look at every single hypothesis. Now, most of these people who forward these, they're calling them theories. We call them a hypothesis. You have to prove that first. And what we're asking is for that investigation that we talked about, and it's your for, to look into each one of those, rule them in, rule them out. We know there has to be, as we studied, there would have to be more than one cause that had to be put together to do this sort of thing. By the way, they were talking about World Trade Center. You couldn't penetrate it. They were really looking at people and whatnot. Not too long before 9/11, there was a bank robbery on the 11th floor. Those bank robbers got in. One of them had he used to work at World Trade Center 1. That's the North Tower. And they robbed the bank on the 11th floor and got away with it until one of them began talking. But, I mean, it's easy to penetrate.
Well, I mean, thousands of office workers go there every day.
That's right.
And
that's
people
right.
go up to the restaurant up on the top and everything.
That's right.
So, you know. Okay, now you have these five major theories. I'll list them again for people. There's the aircraft impact and fire. Another one, missiles and aircraft bombs. Third one is chemical and high-yield explosives. Fourth is directed energy and laser weapons. And the fifth is nuclear weapons. Now, do these theories, do they sort of complement each other? Or do they rule each other out? How does that work?
Yeah. Let me talk a little bit here to answer that question first about our own methodology. What we did was we looked into the, quote, most likely theories. There's more than one theory in each one of those categories
right.
that you just talked about.
Now, these are the major categories.
Right. So we looked at the most likely ones, and then we did research around them to see how they stand up scientifically. And if they had great probability, then we considered that they were a serious hypothesis. But then we had to stay basically within those hypotheses that they were originally, in other words, the person or persons who were proposing this theory, this hypothesis, we had to stay within their parameters. And certainly our fingerprints are on the bill to that extent that we did look at the probability. We also looked at the repetition in terms of how many people seem to look in on this particular hypothesis and think it's viable. To answer your question directly, we don't really want an investigation that looks at, you know, 14 different hypotheses individually and just ruling out one at a time, because it's our belief that there were multiple evidences that each of the hypotheses repeat in themselves, may see in a different way, but are needed to keep, in other words, to keep all 14 of these hypotheses together in the investigation, because there were multiple methods by which the buildings were destroyed. And so you find different crossovers. You find burned cars, for example, that are found in the directed energy hypothesis, and also in the nuclear blast waves. They're found in that theory. In the laser technology area, the plasmoid, fluorine, and DEW also suggest the use of lasers in terms of how the buildings are destroyed. When you talk about upwellings, that were only visible when we began to look at satellite reconnaissance photographs and so on, coming up several blocks away from the explosions, then you begin to also look at thermobaric nuclear with a reactor meltdown kind of things, because those are the all those theories suggest that the upwellings were caused by those evidences.
Well, it would seem to me that the really a comprehensive investigation, I think you would start with the observable facts on the ground.
Absolutely.
You know, list them all, list every observable fact on the ground, and then you have your various hypotheses and see which explain these facts.
Well, that's the whole point, is there are different types of evidences that have been excluded by each one of these hypotheses, and certainly by the so-called official report.
Well, I wouldn't exclude anything myself. I would include everything we know.
Well, in the first place, they excluded 503 direct testimonies of what people saw and experienced, the firefighters, etc. So we need that. We need that personal experience. One lady who was blown out into the street from Building 1 in the revolving door had a fireball blow her clear out into the street on her back. So fireballs, in other words.
So that should be included also. Everything should be included.
Visual, experiential, chemical especially. Chemical evidence has not been included. Barbara's already mentioned the chemical evidence that has been left out. And finally, I've always added in there, in my own thinking, criminal forensic evidence, because you find 744 cremated body parts over across the street on the Deutsche Bank building. So we need to see all of those forms of evidence, and we need to see all 14 theories that inform each other in terms of possibility. That's what the scientific method is about.
Right. Okay, the number to call is 503-231-8187. People have questions. I think this would be a good time to tell people what is coming up after this show. At 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, Bill Resnick will interview experts and people on the ground about the uprising of workers in Wisconsin. That's what this rally in Salem today is all about. And Jan Hawken talks with Tabiti Lewis about his new book, Ballers of the New School, Race and Sports in America. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Locus Focus features a look at farming beyond the barcode with Joel Salatin of the Polyface Farm and Claire Carver of Big Table Farm. At 11 on Health Watch, Dr. David Naiman speaks to psychoanalyst Barbara Almond about her book, The Monster Within, The Hidden Side of Motherhood. And at 11:30, we'll hear Health and Healthcare Forum as Roberta Hall interviews Dr. Joan Gross, professor of anthropology at Oregon State University. And she now works in the area of food, hunger, and food culture in Willamette Valley. So that is all coming up on KBOO, your radio station. And I think, do we have a call? Oh, we have two calls. Let's go with Joe. You're on the air, Joe.
Yeah, it seems like Michael Rupert pretty much wrote the book on all this, and the evidence is pretty clear. They excluded all the, from the official report, all the things about Building Number 7 was redacted. I mean, it's pretty obvious that this whole thing was set up. I mean, the Project for a New American Century, I mean, it's just a question of getting people to, you know, accept what's out there. I mean, the that movie that was done, the Bush Crime Syndicate by that British guy, what's his name, Greg?
Pallast?
Yeah, Greg Pallast did that. The Bush Crime Syndicate, I mean, there's a ton of evidence out there. It's just a question of getting the officials to, you know, admit that this is all about the oil.
Well, you know, you mentioned Mike Rupert. He wrote in his book, I think it was Crossing the Rubicon. I mean, he has written that that he could prove that he would start with the Air Force response, the fact that these things all happened before any Air Force planes ever took off. And he has a goes into great detail about that. And right now his position is that none of this is going to get really investigated anyway, and he is focusing on peak oil and climate change. But that's where his priorities are right now. But anyway, does anyone want to respond to Mike Rupert's?
Well, you have to look at the copyright of his book on Crossing the Rubicon. But a lot of things have come out since then.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about him, he has awakened, in the beginning, doubts about that. Now, there are 62%, according to the 2007 Pew poll, 62% of Americans do not believe in the official story.
Right.
And so he's done yeoman's work there.
Well, this is where an investigation would really be needed. Do we have another call or...
Thank you.
Another Joe. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, you guys pointed out some stuff there I hadn't heard before about some of the radioactive isotopes. What were they again?
Well, Barbara, you want to talk about that?
You've got the highest, the greatest residue was in strontium-90.
Strontium?
Is in barium, is in vanadium.
Wow.
Tritium. This was found by the U.S. Geological Survey. They made their report, but they were very careful they had to be told, do not mention strontium, because people will think it was a nuclear event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially strontium gets into your bones and causes bone cancer and everything else. The thing I had heard about, and there's a local cable access show, I don't know if you guys live in the area or not, but on local cable access from Portland Community Media up here, it's kind of like KBOO of the TV waves. The first and third Saturday, the first and third Saturday of the month at 5 p.m. is a show called 9/11 Was an Inside Job. Bill Olson does really a bang-up job on this show, and he illustrates every 2 weeks when he does the show all of the details, but one of the things he keeps bringing up is the nanothermite and nanothermite and the little microscopic-sized iron or steel balls that they found on the tops of cars, blocks and blocks away. So, when you slow down the video, there's there's one chunk of steel, I think, that weighed something like 6,000 pounds that was ejected out of the side of one of the buildings. And, of course, building number 7, how did it fall? It basically imploded on itself, and the plane never even hit it. But I did hear some interviews, I think this was on KBOO a few years ago, they were interviewing some people that had worked in building number 7, and at a certain point in time during their career and working in that building, they were all pulled out of the building, and they were relocated elsewhere for about 2 or 3 months. When they came back, they found in various nooks and crannies in the corners and closets and stuff, they found what probably was most likely concrete dust. So most likely, at least building number 7 was drilled and filled with probably high-speed explosives. And then also there was a couple of French brothers that were doing a documentary on New York City firefighters, and they haven't had their movie cameras out that morning, and they were out on a call with the New York City firefighters, and they heard this plane coming in really low, and one of the guys panned his camera up. Well, on this DVD, as a matter of fact, I got it from KBOO down there probably 5 years ago, it shows that when I think it was the first, maybe it was the second plane, I'm not sure, just as it was connecting with the building, because they slow-moed this thing really down really close, just as it was making contact with the building, about a third of the way back on the fuselage of this gigantic jetliner that was going in, plowing into the building, there was a brilliant white flash, which I suspect was some kind of magnesium or something similar to that to help ignite the fuel and stuff. But I know about two different other high-rise fires. One was in Brazil in the mid-'80s, and the other one was in 1988, I think, down at Los Angeles, where one of them burned for 36 hours, and the other one burned for 48 hours. And the videotape that I saw from the one in back in 1988 of the First Interstate Bank building, they showed the helicopter had their, from the local news channel, was back about a quarter mile away with their telescopic lenses, and they zeroed in on this building, and it looked like a kiln, you know, just red hot glowing for two floors about halfway up on this, I don't know, it was a 100-story building or somewhere in that, plus or minus a few stories. But so, I mean, you know, the whole thing is a joke. And
well, this will be something that we ought to investigate, I would think. You're bringing up a lot of different issues here.
Oh, the whole thing is a big hoax. I mean, even the thing that happened at the Pentagon, I'm no expert on this kind of thing, but I was looking at the photographs that they had in the newspapers a couple of days later, and I'm going, well, what the hell is they showed an engine inside of the building, a jet engine that was part of the wreckage. Well, this jet engine was about maybe 3.5-4 foot in diameter, because
okay.
One of the inspectors in there wearing his hard hat.
Well, you know, it's probably we could spend the rest of the hour just mentioning hundreds of facts that need to be investigated. I would like to know. Barbara was talking about the radiation around the area, and I had heard somewhere that Mayor Giuliani had. It sounds crazy, but he had banned Geiger counters. Is that true?
It was Bloomberg.
Oh, okay.
And
mm-hmm.
one of the councilmen and voted down. And that sounds. Would you do that?
Yeah, how did that? When did that come up?
That came up about a year ago.
Really?
Yeah.
No, in what way? Did people want to go down there 10 years later and.
Well,
with your Geiger counters and what?
It sounded so suspicious, but the people who showed up in mass were not 9/11 folks. They were people who were testing the pollution in the air. And mm-hmm. So why would you ban Geiger counters?
You look at the nuclear theory, why did they pour a nice layer of cement over the top of these buildings at that point, Barb? And why did they show spotlights in the air, which would tend to think that, you know, or say that they were trying to cover the Cherenkov radiation rays, those blue rays that came up from Chernobyl?
Yeah, the one thing that we know from Chernobyl, because we had to do a lot of research on that, is those rays are always gamma rays, and they were caught. They go up to the heavens. That's what they do. And this is one of the nuclear theories. And one of the caller was mentioning thermite, nanothermite. That's one of the hypotheses of the 14 that we have. But one of them on the nuclear theory is that when building the Twin Towers were being built back in the early 70s to produce power for not only the seven buildings that were in the complex, but also neighboring buildings, they put in two mini nuclear reactors. And one of the theorists, the person who was mounting that particular theory, pointed out that in a nuclear reactor, you have to have coolant or the whole thing will blow up, as we know what happened in Chernobyl. They were bringing in water for their cooling system, for the air conditioners in the World Trade Center. They were bringing it in from the Hudson River, so 6 foot in diameter, and they were bringing in 59,000 tons per day of water. But they only needed, on the hottest day, 29. Hmm. What happened to the rest of them?
Oh.
What happened to the rest of it? Is it being used for a coolant? And one of the things that we talked about is you would have to have, if it was, you know, you have to, people working around that to maintain that are going to have to be suited up to do that. That would be kind of noticeable. And we've been told there are ways of getting around that.
Hmm. So it wouldn't take very much to get. All you'd have to do is turn off the fresh water.
And
expose it to atmosphere, you know, the cores to atmosphere. Hmm. And what you would end up with is literally a Chernobyl. Now, the reason they put we think they in our research that they put those nuclear reactors is because that during the Cold War, we wanted to put everything under the ground. Mm-hmm. So that would be the rationale that before 1993, you had these two small mini freshwater reactors down there. And the theory says that this would have blown straight up and just destroyed these buildings.
Okay,
that's it would have taken the concrete. Mm-hmm. The thing about thermite, it has been used usually to cut steel because
right.
it it has no explosive sound. And the one of the hypotheses, of course, is that they rigged when you were talking about the dust. That you mount, you have to wrap those around the beams, and they cut silently. But the thing is, so much for the steel, what about the concrete? And that is where you have to have, my old chemistry professor has said, you have to have enormous heat. You have to have about 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit to melt steel or get it to buckle. But what about the concrete?
Another thing that needs to be investigated.
That's what we have. That's one of the things that are in our bill.
Okay, this is KBOO. I'm doing non-perfogering, doing more talk radio this morning, and our guests are Barbara Ellis and Barry Ball, right? And they are from the the WTC Science Alliance, and they have a
Research Alliance.
Research Alliance. Okay. And they have a bill that they're calling for a thorough, comprehensive, independent investigation of all the facts around 9/11. And I think now we go on. Do we have another caller? Joanne is on the line. Morning, Joanne.
Yeah, hello. My non-scientific non-engineering mind asks, if lasers were used, where would they aim from? And all those body parts, are they kept permanently for evidence? Thanks for the program.
Yeah, Joanne, basically, for a lot of reasons, you could have lasers. There was a E-10 that we have pictures of in the sky during 9/11. An E-10 is the most technologically equipped plane that's in the air arsenal for the United States. But when you ask about lasers, you're probably talking about either our plasmoid theory or, your directed energy theory, which also alleges that lasers were used. These lasers, we think, is part of the multiple evidence and part of the multiple types of methods that were used to take down the buildings show up. Basically, we have three buildings, building number 4, WTC-5, and WTC-6, that had huge 100-foot holes in the tops of them that graded clear down at least 3 to 9 stories. And in 4, which was shaped like a reverse L, there was even a dissection of the north wing from the south wing. These buildings probably weren't taken down by explosives, but were affected directly by these laser beams that we, have picked up and include in our bill as part of the hypotheses that we have in the bill.
Yeah, one question that comes to my mind is, the people who disbelieve the official conspiracy theory, they say, they put forth the idea that, well, the reason for all this was so that the neocons, the Bush people, could get their war and they could, the project for a new American century and all that. Okay, that makes sense. And what comes to my mind is, well, if that's what you want to result from this, do you really need to go to all that trouble? Wouldn't just an ordinary plane crashing into a building be sufficient to get people, up in arms about the so-called terror threat? Why is this kind of overkill? It seems to me. That's a question I have. Is it overkill or not?
Well, we're focused totally on each one of these hypotheses.
Right.
We're not on the what happened to this and what happened to that. Mm-hmm. Now, those are bunny trails.
Well, I don't know if they're bunny trails, but they're natural questions that come to
true.
People's
that's
mind.
True. But, I mean, we're focused on the bill and lobbying that bill and what comes, you know, after it, whatever. I did want to mention, Per, that we had done five white papers on some of these hypotheses.
Yeah, tell people where they can get this information.
Yes. Yeah. I'll repeat it twice here. It's on our website, and I'll go slow here. http://norfidid, and I'll spell that. N-O-R, F as in Frank, I, D as in Donald, I, D as in Donald, dot WordPress, one word, .com. Again, that's http://, N as in Nelly, O-R, F as in Frank, I-D-I-D, dot WordPress, dot com. You can go back there, you can see a copy of our bill, and you see all the information. You will see also the text of all of our white papers. But we also investigated the three House Science and Technology Committee hearings, which nobody even knows went on. Two of them were before the 9/11 Commission. They were to really hustle, as we say in the PR business, the FEMA report. And when FEMA report did not, they had their experts, they usually bring in the American Society of Civil Engineers, and they did on this project. They brought, they were sort of an ad hoc, and when something terrible happens like this, they bring them in. They're not going to put them on salary. They're the best in the business. they came, and Rudy Giuliani had an order that nobody could be on Ground Zero until September 29th, which means here's a federal committee waiting to get on the premises to see what happened. They were barred until September 29th. As a matter of fact, one of the writers said, we never got on there until the 6th. And they were the committee was salted with at least three members of FEMA who were told how that investigation had to move. And you have some rebels. You don't have engineers that are going to cave in. One of them was a fire science expert who... he said they were in a big dispute on what happened on WTC 7, the 47-story skyscraper. Nobody ever talks about it except those of us who know something about 9/11. And he said they voted. They did not believe the fire theory at all, and they did not render a verdict for that FEMA report, which came out in October, November, something like that. And as a result of that, Per, they decided we're going to have another investigation. And this time we'll give it to NIST, the National Standards Technology Unit of our government out there in Gaithersburg. And they decided, okay, what we'll do is we'll do a computer simulation of what went on. Now, they had some of the steel beams under wraps there. They could have done a study. We know now the head of the chair of that Science and Technology Committee, when here they were having these hearings, of which I think it was like 3 hours apiece, they listened, and it was not a full committee at all. but... The committee chair, Sherwood Bullard, at one point near the end when everybody had sort of gone to lunch or left, he was heard to say, you know about those steel beams, they say, and he was in with the group that knew a lot about this, he said, they say they dropped most of those beams in the ocean. Hmm. We know they sent They sent, there were two nearby. They wanted to get rid of those beams. And some people have said the thermite that they found on the Ground Zero was because they cut those beams into lengths that could fit on the trucks.
I've heard that.
That's why, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they also hosed them down pretty well.
I think we might have some more calls lined up, too. So okay. We should try to get, do we have any more calls? Who, Laurie?
Yes, hello.
Hello, Laurie. Yeah.
I would think that Silverstein's insurance company would have a great deal of interest in what you're doing.
Well, one of them did, and that was the one stockholder in Alliance of Munich. And we're talking about Silverstein's first building, because he was just the landlord of the rest of them, and he'd become landlord in July before 9/11. that particular insurance, that was settled so rapidly, but you had a stockholder out in, because it's a stock-traded company, out in California who filed an action, I think, well, because this was settled pretty quickly here. We need to know what happened to that building. That was really fast, and there's all kinds of theories about what Silverstein was doing and what he said. You know, they pulled the firemen. The firemen had been pulled at noon, and we also know that in the documents here is a document that says they turned the fire system off at 6:20 in the morning. Now, why would they turn off the? It was test is what they said they were doing. They turned it back on at 3:20 in the afternoon, 2 hours before the building collapsed.
Well, gee whiz. Okay, do we have any more callers on? Bill is online. Hi, Bill. You're on the air, Bill.
The interest that these folks are trying to keep alive, and I would like to suggest that the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, there are close to 1,500 registered professional architects and engineers that are continuing in this investigation. And she also mentioned the professor, I believe it's Stephen E. Jones, who is a BYU physics professor.
Was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so well, we've already mentioned some of the bunny trails which we've had to sort out in being able to explain the hypothesis we have in the bill. And the question we have the people who suppose these theories really vetted their scientists and their information? For example, we can't find anything about so-called nanothermite. We can't find a vetting of Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, that supposedly, according to David Ray Griffin, has come to that conclusion. But without getting into any of the negatives, those are just some of the perimeters, Bill, that we looked at. And Stephen Jones has a great deal to say. However, you know, his theory about thermite, which is a combination of thermite and sulfur becomes the only substance that was used to bring down and destroy the towers, has been substituted recently by the nanothermite theory. And again, we're still searching it out. We're open to looking at all of this, Bill, but we're not convinced that we need to find one scientist to follow after, and so that's why we look at a number of scientists, which we're not, naming here in this broadcast. Thanks.
Yeah, there's also, the one of the latest that we had. We were talking about George Tesla.
Yeah,
that's one that needs to be investigated too. That's not in our bill, but that's come up recently. But one of the after. Rudy had been, the New York Times sued to get into those 503 testimonies. And one of them is a fireman They arrived at World Trade Center 1 within 2 minutes. They said the front windows were blown out into West Avenue. Those of us who know New York, mm-hmm. it used to be 6th Avenue. When one of the fire laddies rushed into the building with the hose, he noticed a 6-foot pile he thought that was debris from the ceiling. As he rushed by, he realized it was a 6-foot pile of corpses. All the elevators, and this was the one from the basement up to floor 20, I think, were blown open. He could see into the other side. And the one witness in building number 7, when the firemen brought him down, Barry Jennings was his name, he was told, don't look down. Don't look down as we're going across that lobby. And he said, I looked at that lobby. I know that lobby well because he was one of the city officials. And he said it looked like King Kong had stepped on it. he said, why can't I look down? And he said, don't look down. And he said, I knew I was stepping on bodies.
Ooh.
Which is another, and then, of course, prior to that, they'd heard this. He and another city lawyer, Mike Hess, were up on the 23rd floor. Everybody was gone, and the coffee was still steaming. Sandwiches for lunch was still there. And so Barry began calling, what's happening? Everybody's gone. This is the 23rd floor. This is Rudy's emergency thing. And one of the people said, what are you doing there? Get out, get out, get out. And so he and Mike ran. Mike was running around there, found a staircase, and they went down. They got as far as the 7th floor, and this tremendous explosion came from the basement and dropped the 6 floors of steps. And Barry was hanging onto the railings. He climbed back up to the 8th floor. It was totally black in building number 7. He knew where the fire extinguishers are because they follow a line. He picked one up and smashed one of the double windows of that building. And outside was chaos, of course. He saw, this was about 11 o'clock in the morning, he saw the towers were still standing. That's the one thing. He saw fire engine on fire. He saw a vehicle, and he was screaming because all of the fire laddies had left the building. And he said, come and get us. And so the fire, they found him.
These explosions started before, before 10 o'clock.
He said he sat there before the firemen could find him. In the dark, he could hear explosion after explosion after explosion. And then the firefighter found him.
And then later they tried to make Barry Jennings say that he was hearing the explosions of the buildings, which were, you know, being destroyed, and those were the explosions. And of course, Barry would not say that. Interestingly, Barry Jennings ended up dead the day before the NIST report came out on Building 7, and nobody understands why.
They do not know.
No.
But the family, the people who did Loose Change, one of the earliest videos, went over to the house to try to find him and found they had all left.
Yeah. Well, do we have any more callers? Stevie Ray's on the line. Welcome to KBOO.
Stevie Ray Vaughan?
I don't know.
Oh, my mom's twin brother's name is Steven. I have a question about the categories that your bill is going into details looking at. Do any of those categories include financial categories?
No, this is strictly a scientific and engineering
If you bill. Were to run into any of those, would they lead you in new directions, or are you staying specifically?
We're staying strictly in science because you can go many, many directions, but ours is solely science and engineering.
We believe that.
Out of the mouth of my papa is a civil engineer. He said, good luck proving it. So I believe him. He doesn't lie too much.
Well, if you look at the dust, you look at the chemicals, you look at the visual evidence, which we have a great number of pictures. We can't show them because we're on a radio program today.
But the black ribbon that ties them all together is being left out.
Yeah.
That was my only question. Anyways, thank you very much for the show, you guys.
Well, the economic thing, Stevie, is also on a dangling end of the conclusion of our bill. of unanswered questions, because yes, you're very correct that the economics, who benefits, in other words, from the destruction of the WTC buildings, you know, why is it that we're into, you know, endless wars of 1984 and being paid for, and our schools are going broke, and who is benefiting financially from that? Well, any number of questions.
Well, that's something that could be, seems to me, the insider trading allegations could be pretty easily checked out. I mean, this is all should be a record recorded somewhere. Anyway, we have a couple more callers. Let's try and get all the calls. Next in line. Who? Bob is on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Bob.
First, I want to thank Pear for putting this program on this morning. Kind of offset some of the fantasy we heard week or so ago on KBOO. And I want to also congratulate his guests on sticking by their insistence that there be an investigation. After all, that's all it's being called for here. There's so many contradictions and so many fantasies involved in the whole thing that it can't be left to stand the way it is. And so once again, I just want to thank you all. Thanks a lot.
And bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. John is on the line.
Yeah, hello.
Morning.
Yeah, I want to ask your two guests if they're familiar with the book Welcome to Terrorland by Daniel Hofsicker.
Barry?
No.
I'm familiar with that. I interviewed Daniel Hofsicker a couple times, and in fact, he spends a lot of time in Venice, Florida, where the supposed attackers got their flight training. But anyway, what about his book?
Well, I just... I agree that we need a new full investigation of 9/11, but it's just my contention that a more fruitful way of going about it is to start departure. A point of departure would be Daniel Hofsicker's book. It really kind of documents how Mohammed Atta and his 9/11 cadre infiltrated the United States through a protected drug trafficking network in Venice, Florida. And when you put that in a picture, in the big picture, with the Bush's connections to Bin Laden, to the Saudis, to the oil industry, and the attaching national security apparatus, I really feel that that is a more fruitful line of investigation to embark upon than any kind of controlled demolition.
Well,
I would investigate everything.
All things should be investigated. Mm-hmm.
All theories basically center, again, on scientific and technological hypotheses, which in the end, you know, our overview of all of this is that Atta and all of these so-called Arab people that were on these planes basically is a bunny trail, is a scapegoat creation.
What do you mean by bunny trail?
It means that you let them in the country, you know, the difference between LIHOP and MIHOP, I suspect, since you're familiar with the book you're talking about, allow these people to come in so that Bin Laden and his Arabs basically become the perpetrators of 9/11. And basically, you always have to have a scapegoat, and you get people who couldn't fly planes, you get people who don't match up with the characterization of them, and they're used as the scapegoat. And, you know, the dark-skinned foreigners are the ones who did it. And so we've got to go investigate them. And basically, for our money, it doesn't make sense. Okay.
Well, you were asking about a bunny trail. You were asking what that is. A bunny trail is, in political parlance, called a red herring. And you play those red herrings away from, a magician does that too, it's called legerdemain. You play with the right hand that all the audience can see, and in the meantime, you do that so that they never, ever get to the real truth.
Because most of those Arabs are still alive that they claim did those acts on the plane and crashed those so-called planes into the buildings. They're still alive. And, you know, Osama bin Laden isn't even mentioned as the person who perpetrated it. If you go to the FBI most wanted list, he's not. They don't even have evidence. So anyway, those are bunny trails.
Well, if it was up to me, I would investigate everything. In fact, it's interesting you bring up Venice, Florida, because my parents used to live there near that airfield, and One time my wife and I were in Venice at a kind of a seaside bar called Sharky's on the Pier, and guess who was sitting at a table nearby was Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, who are two of the prime people named as suspects. They were sitting there having their drinks. Atta was looking around, glaring at people, looking very angry, and Marwan was having a good time talking to people, which Hopsicker talks about in his book, that people had a dislike of Mohammed Atta. He had very bad vibes, where Marwan, people really liked him, but they were well known in Venice, Florida. But anyway, that's a book worth reading. Daniel Hopsicker, Welcome to Terrorland. Do we have another call, or should we? David, we're going to get David on the air, and then I'm going to have to wrap up. Okay, David, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Abe and Joe didn't do any justice to any of this stuff. They're just as blind as everybody else. That show a couple weeks ago really kind of disgusted me. This show's really doing a little bit more. I like the show 9/11 Mysteries, if you're not familiar with it. Have you seen that show yet?
Yes.
Very much. In fact, she, Sophia, is one of our sources, is one of the theories in Florine.
Yeah, so let's talk about the conspiracy. We've got Sumner. And, you know, here's the man who makes $7 billion on a $500 million deal. He has been quoted on TV as saying, pull it, in demolition language. And I've seen a couple demolitions up in Vegas when they imploded some of these casinos. And, Building 7 was a complete implosion. And with implosions, we don't see dust. We don't see nanothermite. We don't see collastic flows with implosions.
Well, the music is playing. I think our time has come to an end. We're just beginning. I think, obviously, we need a real investigation, including everything, and that is what this bill is all about. So I want to thank my guests for being here. I want to thank KABU, and stay tuned to the Old Mole Variety Hour.